We are one. As we share the glory of our victories, so too should we share the pain of our defeat. In this way, we grow closer, we grow stronger. Malik Al-Sayef, 1191. Hello, I'm Andrew, and I want to welcome you to Visions of the Past, a podcast all about the lore of Assassin's Creed. This is episode 111, and today I thought we'd do something a little bit different and take a look back at the main games of the series to celebrate the anniversaries that have come in the past few months. And honestly, I tried to do this a few times on my own, and I felt like it needed a little something extra. So with that being said, I've brought in a guest, the nerdy archer herself, Louise.
11-1, we're at the Hobbit numbers.
Oh, jeez. How long did you sit on that one?
Since you pressed record, I didn't notice.
Oh, to be honest, I didn't put that together either. Okay, so let's just jump right into it and start with the reason we're celebrating anniversaries in the first place. Assassin's Creed turned 15 this year on November 14th, as it released back in 2007. In this game, we played as Altair ibn La'ahad, who was born on January 11th, 1165, and passed on August 12th, 1257. Louise, what is your favorite, moment or character out of Assassin's Creed?
Oh, God. Is it bad to say that the original is the one that I've played the least?
No, that one is so vastly different from the rest of the games that it feels different.
It really does. Like, it's a really good starting point, but from the jump between here and two, it's so different.
I always felt like one was like this trial run, kind of like a proof of concept game.
Yeah, there's still very much like that remnant of like Prince of Persia in it.
Yep.
Before you get to the Renaissance and the later games.
And that's why I didn't play Assassin's Creed when it first came out. I was just like, it's a Prince of Persia knockoff. I got no interest in this. But once I finally did play it, I think my favorite moment is when he refuses to kill Maria. Because that really shows his transformation of the arrogance and the, I guess, snide way that he was, felt like he was above everything at the very beginning, and that moment just showed his transformation.
Yeah. Don't have anything to add, I completely agree. Oddly enough, I think Maria is one of my favorite characters from one. Like, I think Maria or Malik.
Malik is my favorite. He's just like the sass king, and
amazing.
I like Maria. Like, I like him. I like Maria overall, but when you just take a look at her in AC1, there's nothing there to really like.
Yeah,
she's just
most of it comes from the novels and like the memory keys and revelations.
Yep,
that's
absolutely.
And even then, she's still given barely any personality, and then killed.
Yeah, and you mentioned the novel. That scene in the novel is just so much worse.
It's not the worst bit of the novels.
Well, the idea that they're pulling Malik's head out of a burlap sack and like, look what you made me do.
Yeah, that's definitely happened. That definitely happened.
So, for anyone who hasn't played Assassin's Creed yet, this game was set in the Third Crusade, specifically during Altair's Hunt of the Nine, which happened between June-ish of 1191 and September 1191.
Speedy boy.
Oi?
Speedy boy.
Yes. I did the math once, and I don't understand how that game could happen within that four-month time period when it takes 5 days to ride a horse between Mos Eif and Jerusalem. It just doesn't make any sense to me. And it has to end by early September because of the Battle of Arsuf happened at September 7th, 1191.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Arsuf was very early in September.
Mm-hmm. And it ends fairly recently after the Siege of Acre, because you still see the dead bodies outside the gates.
Oh god, you do. That was... Oh god. I remember studying this for an exam and I don't remember when it was.
It was, I want to say it was like early June.
Hold on, Wikipedia, save my ass. it says July.
July, okay. So that's why I say June-ish, because...
12th of July, apparently.
Because the very beginning of the game, you start in Solomon's Temple at, in Jerusalem.
Mm.
So we've mentioned Arsuf, Acre, Jerusalem. Masayef is also another big city, and Damascus. All these jumping around points, he has to be like the glitch where he flies.
I love that. Because
like, there's like no way in my mind that he can make it. And I remember like the very first chapter or two in the novel, Secret Crusade, gives an exact date of when he started and how long it take. I think it takes between cities. He says something like a 5-day ride.
And that's also including something like, you've got to let your horse rest as well, or you may need to swap horses in cities. You need to get food and water for yourself.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem probable. Even,
yeah.
Even if you're riding full out overnight, like, your horse isn't going to make 5 days, let alone three.
Nope. So, I think we could probably stay on that inconsistency for a while. So let's move on to Assassin's Creed 2. That game just saw its 13th anniversary on November 17th. It's released in 2009. This game we played as Ezio Auditore da Firenze, who was born on June 24th, 1459, and died on November 30th, 1524. Those dates, if you kind of get an idea of your world history, that puts us right in the middle or somewhere near the beginning, I think, of the Italian Renaissance.
Yeah, during like the high period of the Italian Renaissance.
So we see Ezio's birth at the beginning, but we skip ahead like 17 years and it starts on December 26th, 1476, and heads to December 28th, 1499, one of our largest spans in the series of 23 years.
Yeah, really doesn't show.
No, and that's probably the thing that I don't like the most about this game, is that you can't tell the age. Like, you if you're not paying very specific attention to when the sequences come up or the dates in the DNA tracker. But what is your favorite kind of moment out of two?
Oh god. Well, who doesn't love having a fist fight with the Pope, everybody? Just saying that out of context is the most hilarious thing. It's like, oh, what are you doing? Oh, I'm having a fist fight with the Pope. What?
Yeah, there are a lot of great moments in this game. There's the fist fight with the Pope. There is
all the stuff with Leonardo.
Yeah, Leo is good. I actually like Leo better in Brotherhood.
Yeah.
My favorite moments actually come out of the DLCs.
Oh, the speech.
So there's the speech in the Bonfire of the Vanities, but there's also the way Katarina acts in the Battle of Forli. Yes, she did.
Mad respect.
She was known as the Tiger of Forli for a reason. Not to mention her putting the what was it? She put the Catholic Church on lockdown when she was pregnant.
Yeah, pretty much.
Two is where I started in the series. I got it for Christmas in 2009, and the glyphs is what really drew me in. It's where they really expanded on the series, and since then it's been almost yearly I've bought the new game.
Aww.
We mentioned the Italian Renaissance, and this game in particular had a few different locations. There was Florence, San Gimignano, Forli, Monteriggioni, and then, believe it or not, you spend most of your time in Venice.
Oh yeah, you have like, isn't it like a 10-year gap in Venice while he's training with the
something
thieves?
Like that. The biggest gap that I can remember is between the Battle of Forli and the Bonfire of the Vanities. That is 10 years.
Yeah, there's definitely a big gap while he's in Venice, because he has that chat with Rosa, doesn't he? Where it's like, oh, it's been 10 years since my brother. My
yes,
father,
he
my
mentions
brother's
that
died.
It's been.
So it must be at least 5 or 6 years that he's been there, whether on and off.
Yeah, he does mention that, and he's like, it's my birthday, and that's when she hands him the ship manifest.
Manifest, yeah.
Yep. So that brings us to Brotherhood, released 52 weeks later on November 16th, 2010. That means this game has just released its 12th anniversary. Again, we play as Ezio Auditore in the Italian Renaissance, but this time we're centered around Rome. There's a couple other cities in there, specifically when you go and do the Leonardo war machines, and you end up in, I'm drawing a blank on where we assassinate Cesare.
Oh, it's the one in Spain.
Valencia.
Isn't it? Oh, it's the one in Spain, isn't it?
Yes.
Oh, bloody! Hang on.
Yes, the city where Cesare dies.
It's not the one where from the film.
No.
Which is what I'm thinking of. Hang on. Speedy Google. Yeah, Valencia.
Oh, look at me remembering stuff.
Nicely done.
This game had two DLCs. The Copernicus Conspiracy, which was at the time of release a PlayStation exclusive, but now is in the Ezio collection. Yep. And we have the Da Vinci Disappearance.
I always forget the Copernicus Conspiracy is a DLC. Because
yes.
The first time I properly paid attention to Brotherhood was when I played the Ezio collection. So it was just included. It was like, oh, there's extra missions for this guy.
Yeah. And it's kind of weird because it talks about Copernicus jumping from the Templars to the Assassins. Well, not really Assassins. He just kind of does his own thing, doesn't he?
Yeah, it's like, I'm just going to astronomize, whatever the word is. And it's like, if they could not kill me, that would be great.
Oh, yeah, he's just like, I'm going to tell people the truth even though they don't want me to.
It's like, if they kill me, I'd prefer they didn't.
I'd prefer they didn't. And for some reason, Ezio's just like, yes, I will save you.
Yeah.
One of the things that I like about Brotherhood, other than the way Leonardo is, I like the fact that this game in particular, it's not a specific moment. It's the Brotherhood system, the recruitment system. That's probably my favorite part of that whole game.
You get so attached to your recruits and stuff, and it's like, you feel like a proud parent when they graduate to become their own full-fledged assassin.
If I remember right, this is also the first game that put in cheats. And I still, for the life of me, can't figure out how to work them. But one of them, I think it is if you 100% sequence 4. It's the one where you start the training for the recruits. It's called Sisterhood. It turns all of your recruits into females.
See, I did that the hard way. I just recruited only women.
That's what I do too, if I'm honest. I saw that and I just went, that seems kind of daft, even for 2010.
Why have it as a cheat? It's so easy to just
ignore somebody.
They need help. Oh, it's a dude. Never mind. He's got it.
Yep. He's going to be fine, or he's going to end at the bottom of that cliff. Yeah, that's fine.
This civilian has been killed. Whoops.
We can't pass through Brotherhood and 2 and not talk about Bartolomeo Di Alviano.
Oh, he's so good.
You don't get enough of him in 2, so it's really when you see him in Brotherhood is where you really get him. That whole sequence with the Baron de Valois and just standing outside their fort yelling at him, telling him he's got nothing.
Oh God, I'm trying to remember what the line is, because send you to the Malfatto Intorno.
Yep.
To the effing underworld.
And there's also that line about why don't you grow a pair and release my wife? And he ends up telling him that how does he say it? Nothing grows there.
Nothing grows between your legs.
Except there's a hole to the Maledetto Inferno.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah.
He's just so good. Amazing comedic relief.
I think
I love his like relationship with his wife, and it's we were robbed of more Bartolomeo content in 2.
Yeah, because he doesn't show up until near the end of Venice.
Yeah, and even then he only has a few missions, and one of them is, isn't it rescuing him?
Yeah.
When
he's in prison, yeah. I wish I had realized how to do shorts on YouTube a little sooner, because I would have made that Brotherhood line a short. I might just go back and do that anyway.
Do it. I'd do it. It's so worth it. I don't know, because I feel like Claudia is still one of my favorite bits, or like, because of, even though like she went through the same amount of tragedy as Ezio did in 2,
she went really through worse, honestly.
Yeah,
because she gets forced into running Mario's business, and if you read the book, she's not running the business, she's at a convent.
Oh, I don't know why.
Because men.
Yeah, I think because men, and because
it's really has to do with the culture of the time, and
yeah,
it was either you were as your husband said, or you're in a convent.
Oh, there was a line I read heard recently in a Tudor documentary, or like a reconstruction, that was like, women's destinies are: you are a wife, you're a mother, you're a nun, or you're a prostitute, so you have to decide one of those. And it's like,
oh yeah, I feel like Claudia would be like,
no, I'm gonna ignore all of those. And I love that that Brotherhood gives her that sort of, there's that inch of like, she's telling Ezio, no, you're being unreasonable. And I love the bit where he's like, oh God, she's gonna get killed, storms into the Rose in Fury, and she's standing there with like 3 dead guards and a bloody knife. She's like, what? Do you think I can't handle this?
That scene in the book is bigger, because there's like a trail of bodies going out to the garden in the back. And Ezio's like, oh my goodness, my sister's dead. And then he finds her protecting like 3 or 4 courtesans with a knife, and she's like, what? And that gives us that whole line of, my sister knows how to wield a blade.
And I'm willing to do it again.
Their conversations in Brotherhood really encapsulate the culture of the time. It's either you listen to your husband, or you listen to your brother or your father. And she's just like, no, you don't know what. You've been gone for 25 years. I can handle this. I know how to run a business.
Yeah. They're both the child of bankers. They clearly both have the education. I don't see why Giovanni would only teach his sons and not his daughter.
Well,
it wouldn't make sense to me.
It doesn't, especially, I think Giovanni was a little bit more open to allowing his daughter in to the, because he, look at what he did for Paola and bringing her into the Brotherhood.
That's true.
But also, the only downside is she's younger than Ezio. And if Ezio was just starting to get into the business and seeing, he doesn't even know about the assassination or being an assassin at this point. And she is very, I don't want to say hung up, but that's the only term I can think of with Duccio and how
Teenage,
vindictive she is.
I think the phrase is teenage angst.
Okay, yeah.
She's what, 15, I want to say?
I think
Because
that's right.
he's 17.
And Petruchio's like
Yeah.
12.
Yeah, so 2nd of January 1461 is her birthday, and if they die in
So yeah, that makes
76,
her
she's
2 years younger than Ezio.
14. She's nearly 15. She's like a week out from being from her birthday.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't realize it was that close.
Yeah,
That's
because
got to make
they die Boxing Day, or what we would call Boxing Day now.
that really makes her birthday a pain every year.
Yeah, there's a really nice fan rewrite that someone's done of the Ezio novels and three. They've also done, I think, Unity as well. They did a fan rewrite of that, and then a couple of like one scene wonders for certain other games that kind of look into this a lot better and in a lot more detail. They're kind of like, oh, what would the effect of this like ongoing trauma be for the kids? Not for the kids, for the siblings. Throughout, two right up to when Ezio dies.
Yeah, I mean
Worth a read.
we get an idea of Maria's trauma through the feather collection, but we really don't get a lot of Claudia's trauma, because I can only imagine if they did if they did what I assume they did to Maria, that they probably would have done that to Claudia too.
Yeah, they probably would have, but I don't see it in her personality.
That's the thing. You don't see it in her personality.
No, I feel like she'd be one of those who, maybe it's like Ezio is like that sudden anger, maybe like trying not to go into that quest of revenge, but.
Well, actually, now that I think about it, maybe I've always assumed that Maria was raped.
Yeah.
But thinking about it,
I've always read it as exactly the same,
that
that
might not necessarily be the case, because I would have assumed that if Maria was raped, this so was Claudia. But with
unless
the
the
difference of their reactions, it's very highly unlikely we're reading that wrong, and that this is just her reaction to
unless
knowing, because Maria knows what Giovanni is. He
yeah.
knows, she knows that he's an assassin and knows that everybody's going to be dead.
Like she understands the consequences a lot more than Claudia does, who's just saw people being taken away for no reason.
Yep.
Like she doesn't, she's only seeing the surface level of it. I don't know, could you
Yeah,
get
because
to
that short
both?
film at the beginning, she sees Giovanni leaving in his assassin robes and just gives that little nod.
Oh, the live action one, yeah.
Yeah. What is that called? Is
Is
that
it,
lineage?
yeah, lineage. Because isn't it that I think it's written somewhere that she knows that he's an assassin, and one of the things that he's like let her bring with her from when they were dating or before they were married was the bakery. Like she opens a bakery on the in the villa.
Yeah, I don't know anything about that. But I think we've spent enough time on Two and Brotherhood, and we should move on to After Maria's Death, which was Revelations, released another 52 weeks after Brotherhood on November 15th, 2011. That means we've just recently seen its 11th anniversary. Again, we are Ezio Auditore da Firenze, but this time we're in Constantinople during, well, what I consider the Ottoman Golden Age, because we're just about to get Suleiman the Great as its sultan, as the Ottoman sultan. The game specifically takes place between March 1511 and May 1512. We have one major DLC, the Lost Archive, which is probably both the most important DLC for the modern day story and the worst DLC they've ever produced.
I don't know, I quite liked it. Like,
You like the first person platforming?
I like puzzles. I don't
Okay.
mind it.
Okay, I'll give you the puzzle aspect. It's
I
the
love pu I thought I
controls
think you
of.
know by now. I love quizzing and I love puzzles.
That's fair. It's the controls. It's the first person floating head aspect that I don't like. And I'm just now in my into Revelations on my current 100% playthrough. And I did the Desmond ones first because within the Ezio collection, if you have purchased the Lost Archive, it opens up all of Desmond's missions immediately instead of searching out the Animus fragments. So I did that before jumping into Ezio's life. And those weren't that bad. But the Lost Archive was just very difficult. I think we both can agree the best NPC out of and I'm gonna say this and you're probably gonna tell me it's somebody different. But Yusuf.
Yeah, of course. Who else would I say? Honorable mention to
Sophia.
Tevia. Honorable
Yeah.
mention, but Yusuf is clearly the fan favorite.
Yes, I agree.
To
And
the point
he's
that
the
he
only
has.
one that's like, who's the mentor here, Ezio? You or me?
A little bit of calling him out on his bullshit.
Yep.
Ugh,
And he
comedic
needed it in
relief.
this game because
You really did.
he's gotten to that point where he's done being an assassin and he throws away a couple of the tenants really quickly just to
Yeah,
try to get.
oh God, where was it where it was the underground city fire? That was the moment that made me actually hate Ezio for a while.
Yep,
Because
the
that was.
location in the game is called Cappadocia, but
That's
it's
the one.
actually the underground city of, I think it's pronounced Deruku?
Yeah,
Something like that.
it's that mission that just made me hate Ezio, and I
It.
don't think my like feeling towards him has ever recovered because it's very much like it's that moment kind of like when Shay throws away the tenants, but Ezio's like, I'm still a good guy, I promise.
He
I
gets
just murdered
called
all these
out.
people, and I'm glad he gets called out. It's
It
really bad.
not just like Yusuf doesn't call him out. In the novel, it's I can't think of her name, but it's the spy. She's
Oh,
like,
yeah.
there's hundreds of people down here, and he's just like, it's the only way. No, it's because you don't want to take the time to think.
Because you're an old crotchety man who wants to go have a nap. So you're going for the easy solution, which is burn them all.
And at this point, he's in his 50s, I think. Almost in his
He's
50s.
52, I want to say.
Yeah, quick math. That's he's
50.
approaching his 52nd birthday.
Yeah.
But that's probably the worst part of Ezio's life for me. But one of the things that I love, we talk about Sophia, is that he sees Duccio in each one of the games too, Brotherhood
The
and
fact they made
Revelation.
this an achievement is the
Yes.
funniest thing.
Yes. Beating up Duccio is never not satisfying.
Didn't need to be told twice. I'm glad I got the achievement.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Badge of honor.
And one of the things I forgot, I mentioned Lost Archive being one of the most important modern day DLCs. One of the things I forgot in Brotherhood, the Da Vinci disappearance was actually an important one in the modern day too, because it gives the coordinates to the Grand Temple. And that's how at the end of Revelations, they're already at the Grand Temple. Because after Desmond comes out of his coma and he's like, I know what to do, they open the van door and they're already there.
Oh, see, I forgot about that.
Because it's Jupiter that tells him, you need to go here and do this. And he's like, I know what I need to do. And there's like, good, because we're already here. And if you don't play that,
Too much, you've already had too much of a nap. Up we go.
yeah, because if you're not playing, if you didn't play that disappearance, you're at the very beginning of Revelations, they're like, all the recording's off. We can't see what he sees. They wouldn't know how to get there. So with them arriving at the Grand Temple, that I think that's the best time to jump into Assassin's Creed 3. Now this one didn't release 52 weeks later. This actually, I'm not going to do the math, but it released the day before Halloween in 2012 on October 30th. So that puts it up to its 10-year anniversary this year.
50 weeks.
Exactly. Oh, is it 50 weeks?
Yeah, well, 50 weeks and like 2 days.
If my memory serves, this was 72 days before the quote unquote Mayan calendar ended, which was part of that whole idea of 72 in the series. It was part of we have 72 days to get this done before the solar eclipse, not solar eclipse, solar flare. So it's like you start Assassin's Creed 3 the day he arrives at the temple.
I love it when they do that though, because that isn't the first time they've done that. Like added in the date of the release or something happening on
It's
the
the first
world.
time in the series because they go back in the modern day and say all of it happened within a couple months of 2012. Because the very first Assassin's Creed, and I think the Ezio
September?
collection, yep, all it says
It's
is
September.
September, doesn't have a year.
So Desmond could have basically had done the entire first Assassin's Creed in like 3 days.
It's a week. Each memory block is a day.
Oh shit. To be
Yeah, because
fair.
you get out and he goes,
Yeah.
"Oh, we can't do anything tonight. Go to bed." So, talking about three, this is another one with a DLC that has PlayStation exclusive that in the remaster they have let out. This is the Benedict Arnold DLC. But there was also the Tyranny of King Washington, probably the strangest DLC that we've had because that's an alternate timeline. That DLC in particular is Washington shows up after the events of the game, and Connor's just like, "Yeah, I don't want to see you. You burned my village. I don't want anything to do with." And he hands him the apple, and he's like, "Oh, okay, this changes." And then they both have, I'm not sure if it's a Connor only vision or if it's a shared vision.
I don't know, because the ending kind of implies that it's both. Because isn't there that scene where, right at the end, where Washington is telling this other guy in the room to go away, the one who's egging him on to use the apple, and he turns around and the guy's gone because it was like the Tyranny of King Washington version of himself. Or it's implied to be something like pigment of him that would have become King Washington.
Possibly it might have been that it's been a while since I've played the Tyranny of King
Yeah,
Washington.
same here.
I just mostly remember that Israel Putnam was completely different than he was in the game. But before we move on, three was kind of weird. Three was the one where we had it was the first time we played as two separate protagonists.
Yeah.
We started with Haytham E. Kenway. I'm pretty sure the E stands for Edward. Is the name of his father. Haytham was born December 4th, 1725, and died September 16, 1781. After I think it's three or four sequences, we transition into his son, Rataga Haytham, commonly
From
known as
sequence four.
Connor.
From sequence
Sequence
four.
four. Well, the funny thing about sequence four is Connor was born April 4th, 1756. Sequence four starts in 1760. So he's 4 years old in that first sequence.
And he's still telling Charles Lee to shut up. What's your name? So I can find you. All right, toddler, go have your nap.
So these two birth ranges puts us within Haytham's era is in the Seven Years' War, commonly known in North America as the French and Indian War. And Rataga Haytham sees mostly the American Revolutionary War. We see Boston and New York. They're our main cities, even though we see a little bit of like Lexington and Concord out in the wilderness. And the game spans between April 18th, 1754 to November 1783. Of course, it's such a big jump, but this time we have two generations of Kenways. I honestly, if I have to name a favorite NPC, it's actually Israel Putnam.
Oh, really? Why?
Yes. It's the whole Bunker Hill scene. He's okay. If I can stop those ships, will that help? And he's like, yeah, but that's not going to happen. I expect an apology when you, and he calls him mad as a March hare. It's just the funniest thing. And then he shows up and he's like, I'll be damned. You survived.
That is Bunker Hill. Bunker Hill isn't the one with the blockade where he's running through the city. While
yes, that's where it begins.
That is it's one of my favorite missions, honestly.
Yep. So that's the only place where we see Putnam, except there is one other scene, and you really have to pay attention to know that it's Putnam speaking, because it ends the sequence right there and the animus shifts out.
Is that the speech?
It is where, right after Ratika Hayton was to be hanged, he is the one telling the soldiers to stand down. He just saved Washington's life.
Oh.
So if you were surprised that I like Putnam, who's your NPC MVP?
No, it wasn't that I was surprised that you like Putnam. It's more, I thought Putnam was a different person. But yeah, I agree. I quite like Putnam. It's been a while since I've played 3. I'm currently replaying it. I'm up to sequence 5.
So you're right around the point of...
I think he's gone to Boston with
It's the Boston Achilles. Massacre, yeah.
Yeah, where he's gone with Achilles for the first time.
So I get why people like Achilles, but if you are only playing the main game, I think Putnam's the best. But once you start looking into like the Homestead missions, that's where this game really, really picks up, because you get people like Miriam and Norris. Their love story is just so... It warms my heart.
I love the Homestead. I love it so much. It's like, it just feels like that community aspect.
Yep.
Of like, Connor is rebuilding a home.
He is, absolutely. You have to, I don't remember her name, but she's the seamstress. She's the tailor.
Oh God, what is her name?
And when her ex-husband or boyfriend shows up and everybody is there, we will kill you.
Love that. No one stands between her. No, you're not getting anywhere near her. Love that.
Terry and the loggers. Terry and...
Oh, the first people you meet, yeah.
Yeah, they're just... Like, I could stand there for like 10 minutes just listening to them bicker at each other. Because... They legitimately act like that crotchety old married couple.
Yeah.
And their wives are just like, it's just... yeah. I will admit that doing the Encyclopedia of the Common Man achievement, that can be a pain. Because you have to catch them doing different things. And I like how the Homestead is set up. It's probably my favorite thing of the whole game. Because they're not always doing the same thing when you're there. They're doing different things, cutting wood and making chairs. And
there's a personality to them that I don't think you get in, like, for example, Ravensthorpe in Valhalla.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It's where it feels like they're only doing one or two things or repeating lines, even though you go back quite frequently.
Oh, they the absolutely
Homestead,
only have
there
like
is a personality.
Lines.
It's like, oh, I feel like I can get to know this person better rather than feeling like Belle. It's like, there's the baker, there's... the blacksmith. It's like,
yeah, and they're all just standing outside waiting for you to show up.
Ranvi
in Ravensthorpe, and it's just like
Ranvi never leaving that bloody table.
Yes, yes. And that's the one thing I don't like. We'll get to that with Valhalla, but you never see the homesteaders in the same spot ever. It feels like it's a moving, breathing community,
and in real life, you wouldn't. You've got probably one small cabin and your life and all the woods and the land around you. You wouldn't just be in one spot.
And the fact that all the homesteaders call Achilles the old man on the hill, it's affection, really.
Yeah.
And when we meet Achilles, and he's just that, he's really that crotchety old man. He is the true definition of old man yelling at the sky. And
You kids
but
get off my lawn.
he softens up, and it really starts when he realizes that Connor is willing to die for that belief. But I just saw how long we've been in through this, so let's try to get to the next game, which actually I want to highlight, and I don't think we need to. I as much as I would love to give it as much love as we've given Ezio and the others.
It needs all of it.
Liberation also released on October 30th, seeing its 10-year. Aveline de Grand Prix, the only solo period, not optional gender. Woman and brother, the only female game, period, that we've gotten. That's why I want to
Queen.
highlight it. Aveline was born June 20th, 1747. Again, that puts us in the Seven Years' War, specifically in New Orleans, between January 16, 1765, and 1777. The only NPC I can think of that we spend any amount of time with is Bernard.
I remember Baptiste, I think he's one of the targets,
He
but I
is.
only remember that because of the film, the
Oh, yes.
2016 film, because he's one of the ancestors.
Yep.
He's
And
Moose's
then I
ancestor.
get him confused with Agate.
Which
I don't
is,
remember which
isn't
one's the true
he's
mentor and which one's the target, because they both turn out to be bad.
Oh. Well, isn't bad a sliding scale?
Well, true. Like, they both seem to be like trying to manipulate Aveline. But the best part of this game that I wish they had brought back was the persona.
Such a cool
Yeah.
feature.
It the idea that you could change your outfit and go into a different location or restrict your climbing or something like that was something
Or
that I
you have
wanted out of
like,
Odyssey.
yeah, or like, I feel like Syndicate would have also been a really good way to use that. And I feel like there is concept art of it in for one of these later games, but they scrapped it. It probably was Syndicate, to be fair. But the idea of like them changing your social ability, or like changing how you interact with people based on how you're dressed, feels very much that assassin thing of hiding in plain sight. You are
Yep.
blending in, that I really think should be utilized a lot more than it has been.
Oh, I totally agree. I totally agree. But this, I really wish it was a bigger game. It's in the Assassin's Creed 3 remaster. I can't wait to play it again. So that brings us 52 weeks later to Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag, releasing on October 29th, 2013. So it's just now seeing its 9-year anniversary. If I remember right, this released a week or two before the Xbox One and a couple months before the PlayStation 4.
Yeah, it was the first one that was available on both, I believe.
Yep, this is the first cross-generation game. We play as Edward James Kenway, who was born March 10, 1693, and died December 3rd, 1735.
Oh my God, he died on Haytham's birthday.
Day before Haytham's birthday.
Night of, but
Yeah.
oh my God.
Yep. And I saw when I was recording this, I was like, that's not right. And I went back and looked at Forsaken and went, oh, it
Oh, it
was.
is. Oh no.
So this puts us in the golden age of piracy. Specifically, we see Caribbean cities, Havana, Nassau, and Kingston. And the games is set mostly between June 1715 and October 1722.
Towards the tail end of the Golden Age of piracy, which.
Yes. And it makes sense the way, because this is the game that introduces sages. And the idea of the observatory and Black Bart being the reason why Black Bart had conquered like 120 some ships. He's like the most notorious pirate when it comes to ships taken. And it
For a
makes sense
man.
because he can use the crystal skull and the observatory to do it. He's a good NPC, but he's not my favorite.
He's, yeah, I agree with that. He's not my
And
favorite.
I jump between, it depends on the day. It's either Mary Read, Anne Bonny, or Blackbeard.
See, I was going to say Mary or like Steed.
Oh yeah,
Steed is great. Steed's always a fun one. I
Steed's
love
just doesn't
Steed.
have enough time. He's kind of
Yeah,
like
he disappears after like sequence, is it 4 or 5?
yeah,
And then
something
it's
like
like
that.
you find his like his corpse in the gibbet after Edward
No,
did.
that was Rackham.
Was it Rackham?
Yeah, that was Rackham.
Oh, I swear, because
Because I'm pretty sure
he meets the
that
same sort of
moment.
ending. He meets the same ending anyway, because
Yeah.
historically, Steed Bonnet was known to have basically been begging and crying and been an absolute weeping mess at his execution,
Yep.
to the point that people were feeling sorry for him.
Yeah, I'm fairly sure it's Rackham in the gibbet because he makes a comment about him being a poor captain and something about the mutiny.
I thought he was still in the prison when you're going
That's
to get
Vane.
Mary. Oh, me too.
Yeah, that was Charles Vane.
Me too.
Mary is just one of, it's probably for me, Mary is, I think today I'm going to say Mary's my favorite. And
Yep.
it's that
Hard
whole
agree.
your name's not James, is it? That whole
Oh.
sequence, that whole moment.
That like subtle reveal, if you didn't know your like pirate history,
Yep.
fantastic, 10 out of 10. And I also love that thing that it's not showcased as much, and I wish it had been, but like Mary slowly becoming some sort of like mentor figure to Anne, and so she
Yes.
grows into her own personality and gains her confidence, and
And
that's
that's
something we
why I
haven't really
like,
seen in
and
games.
that's, yeah, that's why I like Anne so much. I would rather have Anne as my quartermaster over Adewale. Just
Ooh.
because I like her personality more than I like
Yeah.
Adewale's.
Like, I respect Adewale, but I feel like I'd get on better with Anne.
Yep. And the idea that Edward was just like, why don't you come to England with me? And she's like, no, I'm Irish. That's not gonna go well.
Mad respect
But
for that.
speaking of Adewale, Black Flag had two DLCs. It had one for Aveline, which they just called Aveline. That was another PlayStation exclusive. I have yet to play that DLC.
I will be honest, I have never even heard of that until now.
And then we have the big one, the one they released on as a standalone, December 17th. No, yes, December 17th, 2013, was when it released as a DLC, and February 18th on 2014 is when they put it out on its own. Freedom Cry. Where we saw Adewale, born 1692 to 1758, working as an assassin, he searches Port-au-Prince trying to get out. And this game is set between 1732 and July 8th, 1737. This is another game that we don't have to really stand a lot to because, but if you haven't played this DLC specifically, absolutely go out and play it. It
Yeah.
touches on slavery and the things that the reason, quote unquote, the Maroon Rebellion was so important in Caribbean history.
It's like it's not as long as the main games, but it's definitely worth playing, and there are scenes in it that stick with me.
Yep.
Particularly that bit where he's trying to get all the slaves off the sinking ship and he has to
Oh,
swim
that's
through.
heartbreaking.
It's one of those, it's like that and Lisbon in Rogue are the two that stay with me for like in a kind of like haunting way that nothing else in the games really has done.
Yep,
The
I
ones that
totally
like
agree.
that quiet horror of like, oh shit.
And really the only deal that is probably the highlight of the game for me, but when it comes to a NPC, the only one that really sticks out to me is Madame Josephine. She and you find out, I don't remember if it's in his Codex entry for Rogue, or if it's in, I think Initiates was still around at this time. Actually, yes, I think it was Initiates with his grandson Essiosa.
Yeah.
Josephine was, I don't know if they married or not, but Josephine was Essiosa's grandmother. They, Adewale and Josephine together produced offspring.
Yeah, I don't think they married. I think it was more of a, I don't want to say like an on again off again relationship, but something that was a little bit informal.
Yep. Yeah, totally agree. And so that brings us to our next main installment and the last one for the 360 era, Assassin's Creed Rogue. This year it saw its 8th anniversary, releasing on November 11th, 2014. In that game, we played as Shea Patrick Cormac, who was born September 12th, 1731, putting us again in the Seven Years' War, seeing the cities of New York, Albany, and Halifax, set mostly between January 1752 and March 1760, even though we do have, I call it a little bit of an interlude, that takes place right around Christmas 1776.
Hmm.
Hope. What can you... The only NPC that I really like in this game is Hope. And we're not meant to like her.
Yeah. It's like, I don't like Achilles. I don't like most of the others. But there's something about Hope that I don't know if it's that sort of thing of like we're seeing it from quote-unquote Shay's perspective. And, you know, people have theorized whether or not they had a romantic relationship or whatever.
They really seemed like they did.
Yeah, it's that friendly flirting. Is it a little bit more?
Yeah, and like we could talk about Charles Gist because he was great as a quartermaster.
Yeah, he was.
Haytham again.
Liam really... O'Brien.
I don't like Liam.
I'm impartial, but I think they missed a trick by not having the voice actor Liam O'Brien voice Liam O'Brien.
Yeah, like it's one of the smaller games in the series. You mentioned the Lisbon, what happened in Lisbon, that earthquake. Mm-hmm. That's really the highlight of the game.
I love the set design for the Arctic sections, though. That was like, until Valhalla was like, I don't know, something about like wintry scenes in games just gets me. And I instantly like those.
Yeah,
in Lisbon were like my favorite ones.
I know this happened, this, what I'm going to mention with, it was in Rogue and it was in Black Flag, but I liked hunting the narwhals. Just the whaling aspect of it, showing how they would have done it historically at this time.
Yeah.
I know it had a big thing with PETA, but nah, I'm good. I'm good. And this game actually did have a DLC too. This was the Templar Legacy Pack. It had a couple missions, a couple cosmetics. Nothing really big for this game. The big game that released the same day, November 13th, 2014, 8 years ago, was Assassin's Creed Unity. This was the first Xbox One and PlayStation 4 only game.
And the first game I ever finished.
Oh, first one you
finished. This is where I joined.
Okay.
Just like after Unity's release and before Syndicate was when I got introduced.
So this game is set specifically between December 27th, 1776 and August 7th, 1794. Of course, there are a couple moments where you're farther along, 1810, 1822. So that puts us right in the middle of the French Revolution. Mm-hmm. In Paris, Versailles, and Franciade, which had the name changed from Saint-Denis and then back to Saint-Denis. But we only see Franciade in the Dead Kings DLC, mm-hmm. which is free for everyone. So if you got Unity, go ahead and get it. In Unity, we play as Arno Dorian, who was born August 26, 1768. I think you and I, if I am wrong, I want you to tell me, because I'm pretty sure we're going to say that favorite NPC is going to be Elise.
No.
Oh, okay. Well, then I'm going to be absolutely wrong here, that the favorite moment was actually all the bugs, because there's so much fun to come out of that.
Also, okay, so
what do you got?
So, I like Elise, but but I've spoken with friends of mine on a private Discord server before about like how she brings out the worst in Arno, that they're almost codependent of, oh, I'm going to make you do this bad thing and you're going to enjoy it. Kind of that, okay, that toxic friend, toxic lover kind of thing. And I don't really like that vibe.
Okay. But... so are you going to go with Bellic then?
I don't know. I don't know if I have a favorite secondary, like NPC or secondary character in Unity. Because I really latched onto Arno when I joined because he was my first assassin.
Okay. The problem I have with Arno as a character in himself is all he wants is to atone for the death of Francois de la Serre and Mary Elise. It's just...
and he gets neither of that, really.
He's a dog being pulled around and does not care about anything to do with the assassins. They were a means to the end.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah. Which I understand now. Like, going back and replaying it, there's very much... there's almost like a sense of apathy. It's like he walks through the estates general.
And yeah, he's just
meeting,
like...
the meeting of the three estates. And he's just like, what the bloody hell's going on? I don't know. I just need to find Monsieur de la Serre. It's like,
yep.
No, I want to stay and watch the historical event come back.
Yeah, I've tried to do that. And it just stops. Like, nobody talks. And...
it's really annoying. We missed the tennis court oath. How dare you?
and that...
I'm pretty sure that's... no,
it's mentioned in the database.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure that's around his birthday too, because his birthday is the same, the date of day month is the same date the Declaration of the Rights of Man and Citizen was ratified, because they announced that probably about 2 years after Unity, of like, happy birthday Arno, this happened on this date.
I don't remember that happening.
But I think, like, my favorite bit and the bit that actually got me into Assassin's Creed as a whole is the title sequence Escape from the Bastille.
Oh, yeah, that was
stuff
fun.
About the cinematography, the music.
Yes, absolutely.
Just, I remember I didn't even have the game at this point. I was watching Radbrad play on YouTube and I just kept replaying that sequence over and over and over. Because I was just enthralled.
So, another one of, like, I always have this soft spot for the balloon ride.
Yeah.
And I don't know why. Like, I think it's the idea that he has to follow the balloon on the rooftops, and then he grabs that rope, and I think he gets beat up a little bit bouncing off buildings.
Yeah, he gets whacked into a couple of walls.
Yeah, and then he wakes up, and she's like, bye.
Had to run. Lol. Je t'aime. Bye.
Oh, and thinking about it. No. Well, I guess it depends on where they got his DNA. Because I was thinking that moment might have brought in the ancestor of Cal from the movie.
Yeah, Callum Lynch. Yeah. Because he must have had children, whether or not. I don't know.
Yeah.
There's that theory going around. It's like, oh, you know, he was drunk a lot when he went back to Versailles after being kicked out. He might have had illegitimate kids from a fling.
I don't think I think nobody would want to be around him when he's drunk.
Yeah, I don't see that.
It's like, another good NPC, just real quick, is Napoleon.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I'd agree.
The scene where he finds what I initially thought was an apple, but it turns out it's the key to Saint Denis.
Mm-hmm.
That whole sequence is really the music and the way it's just written and shot. It's beautiful. It's great.
There's some really beautiful moments in this game. It's a shame that the bugs overshadowed so much of it.
Yeah. And it's probably the most beautiful when it comes to the graphic fidelity. Like, it's just something about the style of revolutionary France that I like compared to the open nothingness of the RPGs that technically probably run a little bit better and a little higher resolution. But it's just the way. And the next game we're going to talk about, which we might as well just jump right into, It's just, it's a dirty and grimy era, so nothing's pristine and pretty.
But I respect that so much.
The fact that they did it and they used the smog and the pollution as the clearing up for your viewpoints was a very
I thought
smart
that was very
stylistic
clever.
choice. But if you're curious, what we are talking about is Assassin's Creed Syndicate, which released on October 23rd, 2015. So that's the 7th anniversary of this game. Here we play as Jacob and Evie Fry, twins born November 9th, 1847, during the Industrial Revolution, or since we are within London, we all usually just look at it as the Victorian era, specifically the dates of February 10th, 1868 to sometime in 1868. This game
I
set.
sort of figured it out, but it can't be later than maybe August.
Okay.
It's very quick because Queen Victoria's ball at the end
Oh, yeah.
wouldn't happen later than August if the season was on. So at
Okay.
latest, it's like maybe like 20th, 25th of August.
That makes sense. And speaking of our favorite moments, that's probably mine. That is honestly probably mine.
The key to the woods.
The dancing with Steric, is that dance era appropriate?
I think so. I think it's been simplified for the animating, but it feels appropriate. The Marzooka definitely is.
Okay.
Probably a little bit after its main fashion, but it's definitely like era appropriate. You know, you would dance to this at a ball kind
Oh.
of music.
So that's my favorite moment, and I don't really have a favorite NPC because I'm attached to Evie. I won't play as Jacob if I don't have to. I don't like his personality. It grates on me. But actually, thinking about it, maybe I do have a favorite NPC in Winston Churchill.
Oh, I have
And
issues with Churchill.
I
I have issues with him.
I mentioned Churchill because we have a moment on September 25th, 1916, where we play as Lydia Fry, Jacob's granddaughter, who was born March 19th, 1893. You have issues with Churchill, huh?
Yeah, I think I spoke about this with James and Declan when we spoke more about Lydia and Syndicate in general, but basically in terms of, you know, Lydia's whole arc being you can get he's like, "Oh, you can get success and gratification from, you know, what HS Asquith, the prime minister at the time, can give you. He can give you a reward." He's like, "I just want the right to vote." He would not agree to that. He would have thrown her in jail. He hated suffragettes so badly.
Okay, that's fair.
It's heroifying his character because of World War II, I think. I don't like him. Not in this
Well,
period.
and if you look at him, and maybe I need to do a full podcast on his life, because he jumps from an assassin friend to a Templar friend, and I think back to an assassin friend.
I'm pretty sure in one of, I can't remember where it is. I think it might be Initiates again, but I never played that. There's a piece of intel which kind of implies that he, Hitler, whoever was prime president of at the time, helped orchestrate World War II in the lore of the game. So, oh, that's.
Well, yes and no. I think you're talking about part of the glyph series in Assassin's Creed 2,
That might be the one.
because it seems like Stalin, Hitler, Roosevelt, and Churchill were all manipulated by Ford, Olds, Firestone, and Edison.
Of course, it's Edison.
Yeah. So
But yeah. But that just sticks out to me because back when I was a newbie Syndicate fan, I remember showing my friend the games and then sending her that out of context. And I have a screenshot of her reply, which is just, "Churchill, you absolute dick," in full caps.
it
But yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Because this is the game that is like my favorite game, how can I pick one moment? I think, oh God.
Oh, how about sequence, I think it's 8, with Jacob and, not Steric,
Roth?
Roth.
Hiss, bastard man. Hiss. He's my favorite to hate.
Okay.
It's like, you have 3 bullets and a gun and 4 people standing in front of you. What do? Shoot Roth 3 times.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the Alhambra sequence was very... I love the design of it. I wish they could have done more with it.
It's that moment where Jacob really has that epiphany, has come to Jesus moment, where he's
like... Yeah, it's like, oh, I'm at maybe, the point of no return if I go forward.
Yeah, and he's starting to realize that maybe "and my rooks" wasn't the best idea. Mm. But the one few DLCs that are in Syndicate, Dreadful Crimes, The Last Maharaja, and the infamous Jack the Ripper DLC. I know how much you love that one. Set during the Autumn of Terror of 1888.
Yeah. It's pretty. It's good, but I don't like it.
It's hard to play. It's hard to get to, especially when they're like, here's a couple missions of playing as Jack the Ripper.
The very first thing you do is play as Jack.
Yeah.
It isn't even like, oh, we're going to play as Jacobs a bit, and then, oh, it's like, nope, you're a serial killer now.
And I thought they gave the idea that he's mentally ill was a really nice touch with the words jumping up on the screen.
I do like the graphics of it. It's just this, like, the ramifications of it, I think. Particularly with, like, the whole thing of, like, you know, this is a person or persons who historically murdered at least 5 women. I have issues with this. It's like, we barely even know the names of the women he did murder, and they are supposed to be people that Jacob trained, that he knew very well, that were supposed to be, like, his, like, de facto daughters or sisters. And he's just going to, like, completely blanch over that. And there's no, like, you don't see any of the other initiates that Jacob would have trained being helped. Where's his son? Where's Emmett?
Yeah. Like, there's just so much about that. And then only Evie comes in, and she's got to come back from...
Where's Henry?
From India. That's
Henry.
Actually, how could we talk about Syndicate and not bring up...
The boy!
Jayadeep.
The boy.
Yeah,
scratch that. I do have a favorite NPC. It's this man right here.
The press flowers is a very cute way to show not just their love, but the
personality and
it's also the showing the Victorian idea of pressing flowers.
Yeah. Also, fun fact from Underworlds, Henry, the book that Henry starts with when you get the first pressed flower, his mum gave it to him the day he was given the curio shop.
Oh,
his mum's, like, Language of Flowers book that she was bequeathing to him.
Oh, that is even one more layer. Like, right now I'm on the Black Flag novel moving forward, so I'm not quite there yet. But yeah, it's a
nice touch, and it's like, Piara loves her son. It's like, I have issues with Arbaz, but like, these two, I love them.
Yeah.
So much.
Yeah, totally good.
And it's a shame we didn't get more of Henry. He's in one of the comics. Like, there's a Syndicate comic,
Locus,
just Evie and Henry. There's Freddy in there too.
Yeah, that's...
But there's no Jacob.
Nope, and that has to do with the Pinkerton Agency, something. I don't remember what they were doing.
Oh, the Voynich manuscript.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, I only read it once.
One of those Pinkerton agents is Mark Twain.
Yes.
Samuel Clemens is Mark Twain.
Yep. Yeah, it's interesting to see.
It's a ride.
Yeah. So let's move on to, we're jumping 2 years now into the RPG era. So releasing on October 27th, 2017 was the, called a semi-reboot, I guess, a soft reboot. Assassin's Creed Origins, taking us back to 49 BC to 39 BC. So we're in Ptolemaic Egypt, seeing Siwa, Alexandria, Memphis, and the Giza complex. Playing as Bayek of Siwa, who was born sometime around 85 BC, and his wife Aya of Alexandria was also born sometime around 85 BC. We do have two DLCs here. We have the Hidden Ones and the Curse of the Pharaohs, which adds like Thebes and the coast of Sinai. I don't remember if there was an exact city there or not. But thinking about NPCs on this one, Cleopatra. And I know she's got that basic Hollywood look where she's over-sexualized.
Elizabeth Taylor-esque.
Yeah. But she's the only one that really sticks out besides like Apollodorus.
Yeah.
And Caesar.
The one that they keep coming back to is it's because of Arya's position, I suppose. It's got to be Cleopatra.
Yep. And is it Alex? What voice Cleopatra?
Yeah.
Or do I have her mixed up with
Alex was Arya, wasn't it?
I have
Alex, I think, was Arya.
Okay, I probably have them mixed up, but both of their voice actors, the Sisterhood, did that first podcast where they were together and had them do the lines from the Origins comic.
Oh, that was so good.
That was amazing.
I got chills.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I'm
going
to have to find that again.
Yeah. Definitely worth a re-listen, I think. In terms of like standout moments, the one that keeps coming back to me is the Heron assassination right at the beginning, that cutscene, and Shardia.
Yep, that's the big one.
Not the crocodile, the hyena.
Okay, the Heron was the one at the beginning, right?
Yes, the one with the mask cat, dagger catch.
Yep.
The
crocodile's the one with Shadia.
Yeah. It's the one where she was trying to do it for her daughter. I think it was the one before the crocodile.
Okay.
It was the hyena.
Yes, that's the hyena where we're in the Great Pyramid and
yeah, her confession room or whatever they call it now. That bit that is like. Even Bayek feels a little bit guilty because it's shared grief. It's like, oh, you're doing this because of your dead child. How can I hate you for this? But you're still doing something that is harming other people, so I have to stop you.
Yep, absolutely agree. And
the one assassination I didn't take any pleasure in doing.
The
in Origins.
The Scarab. That one was. That one was.
And, isn't that the same voice actor as Adewale?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yep. And I think that's also the same assassination where we first get our first our glimpse of mythology coming into Assassin's Creed, where we fight Apep.
Yes.
Because he gets that big waft and he just pops out and
it's the wife, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. I love that sequence. That was really cool.
Yeah, it was. And it you don't realize this is, you just see it, what they believe, what he believes. And it's not
real for them.
It's real for him. And it doesn't link to the Isu or anything like that.
It's like, this is what he would probably, his brain would make sense of based of what he's been told and believes in.
What he believes. And he ignores all of the Isu machines. He just
weird tech. Oh, okay.
It's not meant for me. Let's move on.
Glowing boat. Here we go.
Yep. there really isn't much else to say about Origins. I wish it was a full Aya game. The Aya missions I hate.
You're so restricted. And I hate that.
And that's why.
Because even at the end, when you were in Rome,
you fighting, can't climb. Flavius. Can't climb. I think Flavius.
Oh, God. Just the that took
dual
forever.
Daggers.
No matter how upgraded you are with Bayek, as soon as you swap, you have like base stats.
Yep.
It takes forever. And there is no sense why she would be that low leveled in comparison, or why she would have such basic gear.
Or why he has Isu weapon flails.
That too.
But once you get past him and you see the death of Caesar, and you get that moment where she goes, I am no longer Aya, I am Amunet. That is just like,
oh, that narration, so good.
Yeah. Yeah, while there's some issues within Origins that I have issues with, it's not bad overall. It was a good first entry into full-blown RPGs.
Yeah, there's definitely, like, some things about, like, I was speaking about this to someone literally yesterday, about the combat. They felt that it was okay, but it was really sort of honed in with the next installment, that they sort of found their groove a little bit with it.
So let's actually go right into that next installment, which released October 5th, 2018, unless you bought a higher edition, then you got a 3-day early access. And this is Assassin's Creed Odyssey, set specifically between 431 BC and 420 BC, putting us right in the middle, and I'm not quite sure where.
Beginning.
Of the Peloponnesian War.
Yeah, beginning of the Peloponnesian War, the era called the Archidamian War after the Spartan King Archidamus.
Okay. We, of course, see 300 at the very beginning, the Stand of the 300. So we spend a lot of time in Athens and Sparta, a little bit in Delphi. And within this game, you could play as Alexios, but I'm going to highlight the canonical choice of Cassandra of Spartan, also known Cassandra the Spartan. Cassandra of Sparta, also known as the Eagle Bearer. Born 458 BC and died October of 2018. Long old life. So you were mentioning combat in this game.
Yeah.
So they did really refine it.
Yeah, it just feels less assassin-y.
It does. They took away the hidden blade.
They took away blending.
Yep, you can't even hide in hay bales at this point.
Yeah.
So they really stripped the hidden aspect of it, which I get it, makes sense. Cassandra's a Spartan, she wouldn't hide.
Yeah.
But speaking of Spartans, that actually brings me to my favorite NPC.
I think I know where you're going with this.
Oh, goodness. I'm blanking on his name. All I can see is like
is a this burning. The warehouse?
The warehouse.
Bacidas.
Yeah.
What a man.
That is absolutely my favorite. And that's probably my favorite moment of the game.
What an introduction.
Yep. If it's not that is my favorite moment, it's where we meet Barnabas with the Cyclops.
Did he call you Cyclops? Did he hurt your feelings?
Yeah, and with the goat.
You can be able to go and find the goat.
You go back, you find the goat, you get an achievement for killing that goat. Yeah.
They really know what players are going to do, don't they?
Yeah, and I don't think you can do anything else with that eye after doing that.
No, it's just an inventory item. I don't even think you can sell it.
That would make sense.
It's just there. It's like, well, this was in a goat's ass. Cool.
There isn't a lot, like, we could go into this game and its downside, but there's a lot of people who have played it a lot
and
prefer it more than
people.
Valhalla.
Yeah, and this is, I think, for a lot of people where they joined, like, James started with Odyssey. My flatmate from university, I got them into like Assassin's Creed with Odyssey, and then they went back and played it in an order. Like, it means a lot to a lot of people. I can understand why people don't like it.
Yeah.
They have issues with it. But it means a lot to people.
It does, absolutely. And like I thought it was a lot of filler. Turns out it wasn't as much filler as the final game on our list.
Yeah. But sailing takes a lot, I think.
Sailing takes a lot.
Particularly if you're going, I think it's, if you're going north, it's slower than it is going south. Or
really?
Vice
I've
versa.
Never, I don't think I've ever noticed that.
To do something to do with the waves and the wind, generally it's slower going one way than the other.
That would make sense if they based that on actual wind currents around Greece. Mm. But we did get two DLCs with this one, and the Legacy of the First Blade and the Fate of Atlantis. These are probably, for the series lore, the best, the most important DLCs, because we meet Darius, and then we get more modern day within the Legacy of the First Blade, mm-hmm. or the Fate of Atlantis.
Yeah.
I guess
Fate of Atlantis. I know some people have issues with that, but I genuinely do.
The problem I have with Fate of Atlantis is the bulk of the DLC is a created simulation by Aletheia for Cassandra, for Layla to relive in the Animus. So it's hard to tell if...
A simulation.
Yeah, if it's real, if it's fake. And that's really kind of part of the issue I have with Odyssey, because we're taking old DNA and filling in the gaps with a book. So that's
you're drawing conclusions.
Yeah. And I get it. That's the best way to explain like dialogue choice.
Yeah.
And it explains a bit on the Imperial Truth from Origins, with Layla's machine being able to break the code, her mind can break the code.
That she can play male characters.
Yeah.
Because that was something that I think they established pretty early in the Desmond games that you can't do. I think it was Aveline's ancestor. I think it was Subject 4.
Subject 1 was Aveline.
That was it. 1, not 4.
Four's Cross.
Yes, that's it. My mistake. But one, they started having psychological issues because they were living a person of a different gender.
And I think we saw that issue with
Subject
15, the pregnant subject.
One. Yeah, the DNA of the fetus's mother and father were competing.
That's actually kind of interesting. I was wondering why we never played as... I guess that's an interesting way of in lore of saying, well, you can't do that because of this, instead of women don't sell.
Yeah, because there's some... I'm pretty sure it's some of the... AC2, Desmond's... I think it's his dream, where he's Altair and he meets Maria on the top.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, why am I not following Altair anymore?
Realizes that the...
Okay. That happened.
Yeah, and you find out that's Seth.
So. Yep. You just watched your own ancestor's conception.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see how that would give you a bleeding effect.
But I feel like, going back to like why I love Fate of Atlantis, I'm a mythology nerd. Like,
that's fair.
But also, like, one of the main reasons I think so many people flock to this game was the fact that it let you play both Cassandra and Alexios as queer, either
you have
or bisexual if you wanted to. And then one of the decisions in Legacy of the First Blade basically just nullifies that choice. It's like, yeah, you have to have straight sex. It's for the bloodline. It's like, it feels...
I remember that being a major issue.
Yeah.
And that was just 5 years ago. Wow,
yeah.
5 years.
Being someone who is a queer woman.
4 years.
Who played Cassandra as a lesbian.
Yeah, I did the same.
And is like, I really don't want to do this. It feels uncomfortable. But you're making me do it.
And just so you could have Lipidos grow up to be Aya's ancestor, which wasn't needed.
Yeah.
It's like saying the only thing special about Aya and Amunet is that she was descendant of
Ancestor.
Cassandra.
Which is completely against Assassin Tenets, because that's more of a Templar thing of, bloodlines matter. That kind of like purism. Assassin's like, yeah, you were a little down on your luck. You need help. Anyone who wants to fight for righteousness is welcome with us.
Even though we don't see that within Altair or Desmond, as both were born into the Brotherhood.
Yeah.
But before we get off track again, let's get into our last game. We're looking at Assassin's Creed Valhalla, releasing November 10th, 2020. 2 years we've been playing this game, set mostly with the DLCs between 872 and 887. Seeing the cities of Alkestad, London, Jorvik, Winchester, Dublin, and Paris. So we get a lot of Norse invasions, primarily of England, where we play canonically as Eivor Varan's daughter, born 847. My favorite NPC really was Ivar.
Oh,
And
most
that was
memorable by far.
and
That.
that was until he did what he did to
Oh, Chelbert. He never said a
Jailbert.
word.
Yep.
He
And
never
so that
said a word.
was probably, and it's not my favorite moment because that's always going to be the campfire scene.
Yeah. I love that campfire scene so much.
Once we got into Wrath of the Druids, I fell in love with Kara.
Yes. Oh, God. There's so many, like, good. Like ambiguous gray slash more villainous characters in Valhalla than I think straight heroes, which I think is kind of the point because, are you rooting for the people who are invading or are you rooting for the people who are defending their homeland? As a British woman, as someone from Mercia who grew up in what was then Mercia, that's a tricky question for me. I laid siege to my hometown in this game. How much more divisive could you get? But I think that bit where you have to go and kill Fulke was one of those moments of sync. I felt like I synchronized with Eivor so much. I physically had to stop because I was getting so lightheaded from my anger.
Oh boy.
Yeah, just for a bit. It's that point where you are laying siege to, I can't remember where it is.
Cyan Bell, I think.
Yeah, you're rescuing Sigurd, you're killing Fulke, and there's a point where you chase her underground and the lights go out.
Yes.
And you just and there's a point I went full like berserker rage at that point, and neither Eivor didn't get any piece of damage from my playthrough at that point because I was just so angry. It was full, I'm just going to attack you. Something's going to happen. You're not walking out of this.
Yeah, there were moments in this
I
game, but
gelled.
there's just so much filler.
Yeah, there's some
Because
good.
like
There's some
there's
good.
some good,
Yeah.
but when you also look at like the Dawn of Ragnarok
Oh,
DLC
haven't played
and
that.
the last not the last chapter. I'm excited for that. I'm excited to end Eivor's story.
The bit in Skye. The bit in Skye was.
The Isle of Skye, that was amazing seeing Cassandra come back. But the
Gate crashing that wedding.
yeah and then you had the choice of killing the mother of the bride. But there was that other DLC, the Forgotten Saga. That one, there's
Oh.
just so much filler in this game that, and then seeing the lore through the mythological veil where you don't know what's real, what's not.
Oh.
It had some issues. I'm ready to move on.
Yeah.
I wish there was New Game Plus or something to where I could replay the missions without having to restart the game.
Yeah, my Eivor is not losing her flower crown. If that means I'd never replay it from the beginning, so be it.
Yeah, just make a manual save and then just start over, I guess, or do a new account, which will probably be what I do,
Yeah.
because I will unfortunately play it over again and get all 93 achievements, which that was another Odyssey had like 93 as well.
But they were far easier to get. Like, I platinumed Odyssey so quickly. I think not even halfway through with Valhalla, and I'm over 100 hours in.
I am done at almost 500.
Oh, that's... I mean, I understand you want people to play your games for longer, but it feels like Valhalla was the one that lost part of the personality of it. It was like, it's pretty.
Yeah.
It's got history, but I don't remember the characters as much. More...
Yeah, because we had just so much filler.
Chat about them.
Yep, absolutely agree.
And all the first thing over Basim, but...
yeah, everybody's...
Who I don't like. Who I really don't like.
I'm going to hold out my judgment on him until after Mirage.
I remember watching the AC15 stream in September 10th. And it was like, it said Basim had been... Oh, and I was just like... It's like, okay, I'm slowly coming around to it, but I don't like Basim.
It makes sense because he's now our modern day character, and we have to...
And he's actually Loki's personality and control. So,
and we have to...
Still don't like him.
Yeah, so it... Well, I guess we'll find out, hopefully in the spring. We don't have a release date for Mirage. But as we've seen by the... average, we could wait until October and November when most of the other series games release. But hopefully we'll learn in the next week or so with the Game Awards. Hopefully we'll get some gameplay and a release date. But with that being said, I want to thank you for joining us today. Be sure to tune in next time for even more about the lore of Assassin's Creed. Luis, where can people find you so they can say hello?
So, I have a Twitter for as long as Twitter exists. It is / The Nerdy Archer. I'm also at The Nerdy Archer on YouTube and at Nerdy Archer UK on Instagram. I have my own Assassin's Creed podcast, and I very recently started doing like a little archaeogaming shorts series about history and like archaeology and fun little facts about the Assassin's Creed series and just historical video games in general. So. If you want to know like some 60-second history lessons, come find me.
Yeah, that'll be fun to take a look at. I think I have it open, but I haven't watched it yet. If you love stories about Assassin's Creed lore, please tell your friends and follow this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcasting platform. And if you want to support this podcast and help provide for new episodes, visit my Linktree at linktr.ee/visionsofthepast for links to my Twitter, TikTok, and other social media channels, and for the specific information on how you can support this podcast. Until next time, my assassin friends, make sure to follow the creed. And to those Templars listening, may the Father of Understanding guide you.